This is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. It's 8:04, and you're listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host this morning, Lisa Loving, and today we're looking at this issue of the tragic, horrible events of Saturday in Tucson, Arizona. And we are asking this question: what if Jared Lee Loughner were Muslim? Would the authorities have tracked him before he killed people? It looks like he had quite a history, quite a public history of violent conflict in Arizona. And we are going to be digging into these deep conceptual waters with our guest, Sarah Robinson of the Campaign for America's Future. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Lisa?
Yes, yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sarah, you are a blogger. You're a researcher as well, a pundit, would you say?
I would. I actually have some academic background in this area. I'm a social futurist by training. I have a master's degree in this. And my interest is in very much how people deal with change, how they approach change, and particularly how they react against change, which leads me into a lot of study of right-wing movements and right-wing sociology and psychology.
Sarah, one of the things that really strikes me about this entire political development in our political landscape in the United States, now that I've participated and seen 100 vicious arguments about it on Facebook, I know the world cares a lot about my Facebook life, but I just see this amazingly steely confrontation, an unmoving confrontation between the people who say you can't point fingers at any individual person over something like this, and on the other hand, people saying, God, we've got a toxic, violent level of rhetoric in this country where multiple people have already called for Julian Assange's assassination on television on Fox News. And in this case, Representative Gabrielle Giffords herself, this past March, came out on television talking about specifically Sarah Palin's poster that put Representative Giffords and other Democrats House districts in gun sites, and listed their names, the representatives' names. It was representatives that had voted for the health care bill. Gabrielle Giffords herself, prophetically on television, came out and said, "When Sarah Palin does stuff like this, people have to recognize there are going to be consequences." And what is your take, Sarah?
There's almost a certainty that Jared Loughner specifically did not see Sarah Palin's map and go out and shoot on the basis of it. Mm-hmm. There is no causal link that's that strong. The problem that we're having here is the same problem that we had for 40 years with the tobacco companies, who said that you can't prove that any one case of lung cancer is due to smoking our product. And they got off for that for a very long time. Every doctor, everybody knew that smoking caused cancer, but you couldn't prove that any one case of cancer was caused by smoking. It's the same problem we have with climate change. You can't prove that any one hurricane was caused by climate change. And yet we know that we're having bigger and stronger storms. And so the right wing has had long experience with exploiting this kind of hole in the rules of evidence, that we understand things systemically and we can see that there's a larger system at work that is producing these outcomes, and yet we cannot not associate any one outcome with the system. And they're doing it again. I mean, this is the same thing all over again. And so, progressives being very systematic thinkers, most of us, we look at this, we see, of course, there has been this climate of violence that has been consciously, deliberately, very calculatedly cultivated by the right wing and the money people behind them for 20 years. And all the rush on radio, and this has been 20 years now, right? And every day somewhere in America, there's been some right wing hate talker calling people to go out and hurt liberals.
Explicitly and implicitly.
And by, it begins to have consequences. And we are seeing consequences. The six people who died in Tucson bring the total body count. From the time Obama was elected, we have had 20 Americans who have died at the hands of right-wing-inspired shooters.
I want to talk about that a little bit more in a minute, but let's dig down here for a second. When we say the right wing does this, the right wing does that, who specifically or what specifically are we talking about? Are we talking about Republicans in Congress, or are we talking about corporate-owned political media? What specifically are we talking about?
The scary thing is it's both. The thing about the left is, you know, yes, we have people. If you go down into the into the threads on the bottom of an alternate or Democratic underground website, you can pull out comments of people who are quite agitated and are saying things that are pretty violent. But we don't give those people microphones. We don't put them on TV, and we don't elect them to office. And the Republicans do, and that's the difference. You know, we're not putting our kind of more unstable element out there onto the public into the public discourse, and so when but we've heard these things from John Boehner, for heaven's sake, just this very aggressive language, and they use it very deliberately, because it turns out voters. Because it fires off the amygdala, and it really sends off this. It creates this sort of adrenaline rush. It's like the old Orwellian 3-minute hate, right? And it gets people kind of addicted to this sort of angry emotional engagement. Mm. It's a very reliable button if you're trying to get radio listeners or TV watchers or voters to turn out. And so this is something that they've relied on now for 20 years, 30 years, to drive their whole electoral system, basically, and their whole culture.
What I hear you saying, it's a motivating factor for individuals and institutions on the right political spectrum of this country to make money and to gain power.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Now, conversely, I want to ask you this then. When we talk about the left, what are we talking about? I mean, to me, this is part of the interesting part of the dialectic here, is that as we saw when George Bush was quote elected unquote twice, and many of us, I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican, and I'm actually feeling super, super disaffected from any political party right now. And I know I'm not alone, right? The Independent Party is the biggest growing party in Oregon specifically. But when we, when I look at the left in this country or the liberal side of the political spectrum, I just see a doormat. That's just the way I see it. So when we talk about the left, what are we talking about? What are the most powerful, quote-unquote, left institutions in this country?
We are growing them slowly. Can I talk about this as a process?
We do have
institutions. We're building them. We lost them. A lot of them fell apart. We had a very strong left in the 60s and 70s, and we lost it. And part of how we lost it, it's important to note, is we were delegitimized, and we helped ourselves to this. In the 60s and 70s, there was a fair amount of violence coming from the left, and there were bombings, and there weren't shootings of this type, but there were other things that happened that were very violent. And the thing about Americans is that universally, we find political violence delegitimizing. If somebody starts bringing guns to the political party, they're not welcome. And most Americans take one look at that and say, "No, this, you have stepped over the line. You're done." And this happened to the left in the late 70s, as the ascendant right played on that fear and said, "Look, you have these dirty hippies, and they're violent and they're anarchic, and you can't let them into power." And America agreed and elected Ronald Reagan. So the right wing is now in the position of overreaching that way too. I think Americans are going to look at this and say, "No, this is, you're not playing politics the way we do politics in America anymore."
Anyway,
this is over the line.
I'm going to jump in really quick and say this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live on the phone with Sarah Robinson. She's a senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. We have a caller already. I didn't get a chance to even open up the phone lines or anything yet. And I just wanted to say, this is what I wanted to talk about today. What if Jared Lee Loeffner was Muslim? Would this whole situation have turned out differently? And here's another thing I want to put out on the positive side. To me, when I look at the situation, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this violence. I'm tired of people who have a microphone, as Sarah said, calling for other people to be assassinated. That's what people do in Pakistan, okay? If you're from Pakistan, give us a call. I'd love to hear from you. I feel as though we're watching the level of violence, the level of discourse, and the complete destruction of our political structure in this country because we are letting these craven, greedy, stupid, too. I want to say that Sarah Palin is stupid. She comes out today and says that she uses this term, blood libel, which is a term that refers to Jewish people. She doesn't even know what the term means. Famously, she doesn't know what a lot of term means. But anyway, what are we going to do right now to take this country back? And I don't want to talk like a right winger. There's got to be something that we can do to make sure that our tax money doesn't go to paying for the FBI to entrap teenagers at Oregon State in some kind of terrorist plot that didn't even do anything. And how can we prevent our other vulnerable young people. Jared Lee Loughner is a vulnerable young person, by far not the only one, and he's not even the last one that's going to do something like this. What are we going to do to bring some sanity, restore sanity to this country? The number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have a caller. It's Steve. Steve, what do you think?
I think it's just as outrageous. Everything that comes out of the right, I agree there's a lot of vitriol, but it's just as outrageous when we hear politicians of both parties say all options are on the table as regards how we're dealing with another country. Also, how many Democrats, let alone Republicans, how many Democrats opposed the Israeli operation Cast Lead a couple of years ago, which killed how many civilians? They all supported it. So, you know, there's definitely, as regards domestic politics, there's probably more vitriol from the right at this moment. But as regards bigger operations that kill more people, it comes from both parties.
It's interesting, Steve, that you brought that up, because Michael Moore's film, Bowling for Columbine, and we all remember that film, he actually draws a parallel between the violence at the school, Columbine High School, which, by the way, last week, the middle school there in Columbine saw a shooting attack by an adult shooting in the middle school. He draws a parallel between Columbine High School's violence, there's some kind of a military business there, and then the rise of the invasion of Iraq. And I think that's a totally valid connection to bring up. And I think that there is a connection as well.
Well, I mean, right now the U.S. is allied and actively supporting Kagame of Rwanda and Museveni of Uganda, invading neighboring countries, killing all kinds of civilians. Most people aren't even aware of that, but both Democrats and Republicans are behind that. You know, so there's so much violence going on at the hands of the U.S. government with both parties involved that what happened in Arizona is terrible, but actually not a major thing compared to what's going on in the world.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks for calling. And we do have another caller. Brian's on the line. Brian, what do you think?
You know what? I want to point something out, and I'm so glad that this lady you're talking to made this point about, you know, the liberals falling back and the dirty hippies getting a bad name and all this, and, you know, Reagan getting elected. But, you know, the point is in my discussions with right-wing people, you know, and it goes back to Newt Gingrich's, 100 Ways to Win an Argument or whatever he had, you know, it was like they can say absolutely anything. And even if it's a lie, even if it's completely untrue, you know, and what happens is you know, as soon as the left, you know, liberal type of person, and I'm not saying Democrats, but, you know, a left type of person comes out with the truth, you know, it's just stomped on and you know, and they don't have any rules. You know, their whole thing is to win the argument. And, you know, I find us left-wing people sitting there trying to throw the facts out. And it just, the fact that it does not appeal, you know, we don't have the faces to appeal to people. Is just what how we lose.
Brian, I feel like ever since Saturday afternoon, I've been ranting at conservative friends and acquaintances and saying, name me one liberal Democrat that ever called for an assassination or threatened to kill someone. Of course, now we're thinking John F. Kennedy, Fidel Castro, right?
Sure.
Goes back to the interesting points that Steve made. Look at the foreign policy level. But it's, yeah, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, Brian.
And you have to go back, 30 and 40 years before you start finding this on the left. And you know, we stopped it because it delegitimized us. And now the right wing, like I said, there have been 20 Americans killed since Obama's inauguration by right-wing inspired shooters. That's a stark fact. And whenever somebody on the right starts in with that, my answer is, show me the bodies. Show me the right wingers who have been killed by angry left wingers, who were whipped up by left wing talk radio. I mean, come on.
Do you think Kaczynski was a left winger? I'm reaching for specifics.
Going back 30 years.
Okay, Kaczynski, you're right.
Yeah, but he was the last one.
I have one more comment to make, and then I'll go. Listen, you know what? I sit back there. My hero growing up, I'm 51 now. My hero growing up was Abbie Hoffman, and to this day, you know, that man went out there and, you know, he didn't incite violence. He was, and if you read his books, he was a completely peace-loving man. And, you know, the only violence that was perpetrated in his presence was violence against him. You know, and you know, he had a choice at certain points in his career and his life to join violent organizations. You know, they were all touting him. And you know, he said no. And you know what? I'll tell you what. We could, and I really don't believe in the cult of personality, but, you know, we could use another Abbie Hoffman out there.
That's such an interesting point, Brian, and thanks for calling.
Thank
I've been thinking, too, lately, you know, really, in our community, in our neighborhoods, what could we do right now to just take the focus of this country back? You know, what kind of project could we brainstorm to put the spotlight on how discredited Glenn Beck, Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh really are? And sadly, Brian brings up Abbie Hoffman. You know, Abbie Hoffman, too, just like Jared Lee Loughner, was a very, he was a depressed guy. I'm not saying he was schizophrenic, but in the end, Abbie Hoffman, he killed himself, didn't he? I think he lost hope in this country. And this is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live on the phone with Sarah Robinson with a campaign for America's future. We're tossing it out to people. What if Jared Lee Loughner were Muslim? We haven't even really talked about that yet. You know, how do we in our country deal with young people and our perceived fear of what young people can do to us as far as being terrorists? What is the domestic terrorist threat in this country? It's probably an even better way to put that. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And we have Tim on the phone. Tim, what's your take on it?
Well, as I read the Constitution, the Second Amendment says a well-armed militia. There are no more well-armed militias. We now have a standing army, and those people should be the only people that should have guns. Mm. Period.
All right, Tim. Yeah. Hey, Tim, are you still there?
Yeah.
Here, I want to ask you a question. So, you know, this is KBOO Community Radio, and we have a mission statement, and it's open to everyone that this statement, this station really embodies the ideals pretty much of the 60s, you know, peace, sustainability, stuff like that. So one of the things that I've been wondering about are what are the most powerful left traditions in this country? You know, and in my mind, I'm like, we don't really have a Sarah Palin. We've got John Stewart. What do you think? What are the most powerful left institutions, left wing political institutions in the United States, in your opinion?
I can't think of any right at the moment.
All right. Well, let's get on it.
We lost a lot of them.
Yeah.
And part of it was too, that the boomers coming up were suspicious of institutional authority in all forms. And so when we started to build them, we often tore them down when they got to a certain point. This is actually my boss at the Campaign for America's Future, Bob Borisage, who's been a progressive organizer for 40 years. And you know, his observation has been that every time our institutions got too big, we ourselves would tend to pull them back.
Mm.
I think that's changing. I think the younger generations are bigger institution builders. I think they see the need for more institutions. And this is why now we do have shows on NBC. You know, we have progressive talk on TV. This is happening. We are getting very, you know, we have, of course, the whole blogosphere has generated a whole raft of institutions.
Mm.
We have the Democratic Alliance, which is an institution of very large funders, who seed a variety of things, mostly inside the Beltway, lobbying groups and whatnot. And all of these, you know, over the last 20 years, there has been a conscious effort to build our power. The historical moment is probably of 2010 is an interesting one, because when the conservatives rose, the conservatives worked within the system from the New Deal forward. They didn't like the New Deal. They never did. And they hated getting into World War II. But all through the 40s and 50s and into the 60s, they worked within the system to try to change it and tried to elect their candidates and did all the things that we've been doing. And in 1964, they realized, when Barry Goldwater lost, they realized that it wasn't enough to change the politics, you have to change the culture. And that's when the culture war started. That's when they got serious. And they built these institutions, and they started to take control of the national narrative. And gradually, over a period of 15 years, they managed to change the way Americans think about money and about what we owe each other. You know, and the whole conservative narrative came to the fore, and by 1980, we had Ronald Reagan.
Sarah.
So progressives now are at that same moment. We're at our 1965 moment, where we have realized that this last decade of working so hard, and we took back the Congress in 2006, and we elected Obama in 2008, and 2010, you know, we're still not getting what we want.
Mm.
And so now this is the moment in the conversation I'm hearing among progressives everywhere, both inside Washington and in the blogosphere and on the street, is the politics isn't doing it. We have to take back the narrative. And I think that's the big thing we're doing now going forward.
Tim, thanks a lot for calling. Sarah, when I was listening to your narrative about the history there, and I mean, a lot of this stuff came from, I want to say there was a Barry Goldwater Institute or something like that, specific think tanks that, didn't they come out of Arizona? Am I being crazy?
I'm sure the Barry Goldwater Institute has something to do with it. Heritage, of course, was the big one.
Right.
And AEI and Cato and some of these. But, you know, Heritage was the keystone for all of it. And it was established, I think, in the early 70s.
Right. Yeah, I just, when we have conversations like this, I like to be as specific as possible because I feel as though people need to take the time to research more when we toss out names, we toss out institutions, individual people. Don't be shy about trying to find out more about it. I think it's more useful than the kind of generalities about they this and we that and the left and the right, blah, 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 to be specific so that we can know exactly what's going on. And that's why I was cracking up in the worst possible way to read about Sarah Palin's blood libel comment, because Sarah Palin, I think it was last night, she issued a video response to all the people, all of us, I'll include myself in that, all of us who have said Sarah Palin specifically, her language, her rhetoric has pushed a level of violence, a sense of threat to a higher level.
There's this whole rhetoric that guns are okay. The guns are an okay way to solve political problems.
And yet the thing that cracks me up about... The thing
that a lot of people say that Sharon Angle's Second Amendment remedies comment was probably the moment the line got really crossed.
Yeah, she's been criticized about it as well. And I think she came out finally yesterday with a statement about that as well. But the thing that cracks me up about Sarah Palin is she's dumb. I mean, she's dumb all the way to the bank, right? But so Sarah Palin released a video statement Wednesday calling the rush to pin blame on conservatives for the Tucson shooting a, quote, blood libel, unquote. Acts of monstrous criminality stand on their own, she said. They begin and end with the criminals who commit them. Now, in the Palin's use of the charged phrase blood libel, which refers to the anti-Semitic accusation from the Middle Ages that Jews killed Christian children to use their blood to make matzah for Passover, touched off an immediate backlash, not surprisingly. Now, Sarah, you have done a little bit of writing about the homicidal maniac in the Holocaust Memorial Center,
right? Jim Acheson and the ones since, and there were a whole raft of them in early 2009.
There's more shootings like this than we really pay attention to when something like this just flared up over the weekend. In fact, I haven't seen the article that puts them all together.
I wrote one again in the wake of the Tiller and Holocaust Museum shootings, which happened within just a few days of each other,
a year and a half ago.
But that was the end of this. We have this run where 14 people died between Inauguration Day and the first week of June in 2009.
This kind of
14 deaths.
Yeah, it kind of flares. It tends to flare. It goes in cycles.
Flares. And that, it's important to note that flare ended when, like I said, Tiller and the Holocaust Museum were a 1-2 thing that happened very quickly. And the right-wing talkers, Rupert Murdoch actually went and told his people on Fox, dial it back, tone it down. And a lot of them did. And in fact, they toned it down so much. And Glenn Beck came out, and Bill O'Reilly came out. All these people came out and said, "No, it's not appropriate to kill people. You know, we're not talking about that. Don't do it." And told their listeners very explicitly that violence is not an acceptable option.
Which is exactly what Sarah Palin did in this video statement.
Today. And it works. There were no further shootings for the rest of 2009.
Well, God bless their little hearts. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Our guest on the phone is Sarah Robinson of the Campaign for America's Future. We are asking, you know, what would have happened if Jared Lee Loeffner were a Muslim? We still haven't even really quite dug into that question yet. There's an update on Eric Holder's comments on that today that are coming out today. But we do have a couple more callers, and the number to call, 231-8187. We have Brian on the line.
Hi, call me Brian too. Okay, first of all, I just want to clarify that the Second Amendment states a well-regulated militia, not a well-armed militia. There's a big difference. Right there, that's something you can take and run with in terms of misinformation. I'm not in a position to speculate what would have happened if this guy had been a Muslim. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's almost a duh question, you know. he'd have been, well, again, I'm not going to speculate, but there is one thing I want to point out, vastly different between the left and the right. And I mean, all these right-wing hate spewers are making a pretty damn nice living at it. They're doing it commercially. I'm not saying John Stewart and Keith Olbermann, bless his heart, and Rachel Maddow aren't doing all right too, but there's a huge minority. The left is almost an underground movement now, and as several people on cable have said, I barely recognize a left in this country. There you go. There's one big difference. The right, they're pandering to corporate tastes. They're helping to whip up the ignorant. And I love that statement. You got to change, you know, the culture before the anything else, and that includes education, which is also taking a hammering. There's got to be an inverse ratio there.
Brian, I have to say right there, you know, Sarah, I meant to bring this up before. I think just literally public education in this country is at the center of this. It's the elephant in the room that nobody's talking about. As long as we have almost half, what is it, like 40% of students in Oregon are not completing high school?
No kidding.
No, I mean, and that's, I mean... Yeah. Yeah, I think that Brian's got his finger on the pulse there.
Here's an example of that, and I'll shut up after this. You remember the big storm a few years ago, where, like, here at the coast, we were without power for well over a week, and, you know, of course, generators were flying off the shelf. And this guy, you know, he's a contractor. He got a generator, so his kids could watch TV. That was his priority, not to keep his fridge powered up or his freezer or, you know, the real essential stuff, so his kids could watch TV, because he didn't know how to talk to them or play with them. There you go. That's my little 10 cents worth, a few, you know, jumping all over the map as usual, but I'll let somebody else have a go.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for calling. And our guest, Sarah Robinson of the Campaign for America's Future. Sarah, I've been deliberately linking Jared Lee Loeffner with Mohammed Osman, the teenager who was just taken into custody in December here in Portland, accused of wanting to blow up the Christmas tree party here in downtown Portland. It turns out he also had conflicts with his parents, an immigrant family. His parents were at that event that he was threatening to blow up, and there's so many issues around that. And today, Eric Holder... Where is my clip on it? Eric Holder today was accused. He came out. Let's be clear. Prosecutors in the Mohammed bomb plot case have rebutted a defense motion to stop U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder from commenting about the matter. Late last month, Mohammed's lawyers accused Holder of making public statements about the case that violated federal regulations and their client's constitutional right to due process. Basically, Eric Holder was coming out and saying, oh no, he's guilty, we did the right thing. He's not really allowed to say that. The kid hasn't even, I don't even... He's not. He's being held in pretrial detention. You know, again, and I think that Sarah, you're the one that brought this up. The whole Department of Homeland Security is drilling down on what's perceived as being domestic terrorism. But how do we really define domestic terrorism in this country? And who is it that's actually doing the damage versus who's being caught up in these sting operations? Holder has spent the past 2 months defending terrorism sting operations. He's calling them, quote, essential, unquote. You know, what's your take, Sarah? I mean, you're talking about all these other 20 Americans that have been killed. I mean, were they killed by Muslim extremists?
Excellent question. Let's look at the word terrorism and what it means. And why is terrorism different than just your kind of garden variety psycho killing? I'm being a little flip here, but you know, we understand that there's murder. You know, a neighbor murders a neighbor, a husband murders a wife. You know, and terrorism is a different species of violence. What's different about it is terrorism is violence that's undertaken with a specific goal, not just of hurting the victim, but of changing the political behavior of other people. of people who are not the victim. So this is why 9/11 was, you know, was an act of terrorism, because it wasn't just taking down the buildings and killing 3,000 people. It was also attempting to influence the way Americans did politics, the way we related with the rest of the world. And this is what terrorism is. And so when somebody who is jacked up, you know, who has read too much Bernard Goldberg and is jacked up on listening to Michael Savage, and very often, you know, most of these shooters almost always have their own personal demons. They're mentally unstable. And these hate talkers have given a name and a face to their own internal demons, basically. They've got demons already, but those demons did not look like Gabrielle Gifford, you know, until the toxic atmosphere in Cochise County, which has been toxic for a good 5 years. This is a very tense place. This is where the Minutemen went more than any other place, at Cochise and Pima counties, which were her district. And this is so that the whole atmosphere down there was already very tense. And so it was natural that if somebody was unstable and was inclined to take up a gun, that the violence was going to take that shape. So this is what terrorism is. Mm. And so, you know, this is right-wing terrorism, because this is an attempt by the right wing to use violence, or even the threat of violence, to alter the behavior of other Americans. And that's not okay. Like and I said, Americans don't approve of that as a political tactic.
Right.
And I think it is overreaching.
We have two more callers. Before we go to those callers, you know, we keep talking about left and right, and I don't want to give the left a pass on a lot of this stuff. I just want to really put a lot more stuff on the table. When we talk about domestic terrorism, I think that the most wanted groups up until we really started digging into this war, the FBI was really flogging the Earth Liberation Front and the Animal Liberation Front. Those were considered to be the biggest terrorist organizations in the country.
All 15 of them, right.
I don't believe they ever physically injured anyone, although I know that one of the accused, he also committed suicide in jail. But I just want to toss that out there. I don't want to be all one side, the other side. Again, I'm not a Democrat or a Republican.
And again, you're reaching back 20 years.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the best you can do in 20 years.
It's true. One of the magical engineering pixies just brought in a post from yesterday's Facebook. What if the Black Panthers were to post an ad campaign that said there was a Second Amendment cure for today's politics and showed crosshairs over red states? Interesting question. And I think there is a definite racial component here.
In all right-wing politics, there's always a racial component. It's part of what it runs on.
Even Michael Steele said crazy. I mean, I don't want to use the word crazy, because when we look at this kind of situation, the issue of relative mental health is a big deal. And Democracy Now! Yesterday did a fantastic report about how Arizona has cut its mental health system more than almost any other state. Also, yes. It has some of the most lenient gun laws. And the sheriff, Dubrovnik there, the sheriff of Pima County, he told Democracy Now!, I think on Monday, that the finest mental health institution in Pima County was the jail. And so I want to be clear about that. How, you know, that's part of this is, as a country, we have just devastated even our ability to take care of each other and our most vulnerable people. How do we deal with that?
Yeah, thank you for putting that on the table. I am just this week moving back to the United States after 7 years in Canada. And Canada has more guns per capita than the United States does. It has a fraction of the shootings, as Michael Moore also pointed out in Bowling for Columbine. I think a big part of this, the reason for this, is everybody gets adequate medical care, including psychiatric care. So people like Jared Loeffner, you know, he would have seen doctors, he would have had meds, there would have been diagnosis. As it was in Arizona, the people around him, his family, his friends, they saw this coming. This was not news to anybody who knew him.
It was on YouTube. Yeah.
And they everybody knew he was coming unhinged, and there was no one they could turn to. Mm. And this is also a failure of conservative policy. Because they've defunded everything, and when you defund things, of course, where we put our money is a reflection of our values.
The war.
When we don't put our money into taking care of each other, this is what happens.
The
healthcare system in Canada is a reflection of the Canadians' will to look after each other. That nothing, you know, that we're going to look after, you know, even when you're dying, you're sick, you're mentally ill. You know, the junkie on the street gets the same doctors and the same care as the billionaire who owns the supermarket.
And actually, this whole issue of healthcare fed into this specific implicit violent situation too, in the creepiest possible way. And we have two more callers. Let's go back to the phones real quick. We have Sean on the line.
Good morning.
Sean, what's your point of view?
Well, my point of view on it is you just kind of hit on the head, and that is the two points, is that they knew about this and the incredible kind of parallel between this kid who shot Giffords and the kid who was the sting operation here in Portland on the bombing. And what really bothers me about it is that, on the one hand, the sting operation here was supposedly they lined him up with this and then, of course, kept him from doing it right at the point he was supposedly willing to do it. And what bothers me is if this kid in down in Arizona, if everybody knew his mental instability and what he was planning on doing, and the fact is that they've already come out and said it was premeditated. So the info was out there. And being that he was 18, I'm sure he wasn't able to keep his mouth shut about some of the things that he was wanting to do. I have the courage to say that I think there's a possibility that they knew he was going to do it and allowed it to happen. Because what that allows then, it allows the very rhetoric and narrative that is going on in the divisiveness to further what the government is all about.
Sean says it's a conspiracy.
I'm sorry, but the fact is, it also, if you listen to the narrative of, even though I agree with the sheriff in many ways of what he said in Pima County, at the same time, one of the things that he was really pointing out was that this kind of thing, it exacerbates the problem of people having suspicions about how government acts and that the government can't be trusted and so forth, mm-hmm. when the government over and over and over shows that they can't be trusted.
Just like the culture wars, this is what right. Sean's talking about, the right. level of rhetoric.
Well, but I'm saying, you know, it may be a conspiracy, but conspiracies do happen. And the fact is, how many examples can you say where the government just stopped a crime to happen just before it happened because they had all this information? The government keeps information on just about everybody anymore. Now, if there's a crazy individual, a kid like this, 18, who's going to school, who is going out premeditated, who happens to align himself with going out on a day that a congresswoman is going out to give a speech that's supposedly a judge who's also going to be there, who happened to be tweeted just at the time, who didn't even know she was going to be there, who supposedly was caught in the crossfires. You know, it does leave a suspicion there when you hear what the rhetoric and the narrative is after the fact, and the FBI has taken over the investigation because a congresswoman has been murdered.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
Sure.
Thanks for calling in. And here's the other thing. The New York Times cover today, the big story was that the police had been called to the Loughner house many times, and that they knew exactly what was going on. Well, they knew that it was a troubled family. And then you have that Jared Lee Loughner posted a YouTube video, 72 hours before this happened, or the week before it happened, although it was pretty cryptic. You know, I guess hindsight's 20/20, but Sarah, what do you think?
Yeah, the fact that the Loughner family had nowhere to turn. You know, they turned to the police, but the police had no social worker that they could bring along. You know, no psychiatrist they could refer him to. And yet, it's really interesting. You know, Sean brings up the fact that the FBI, you know, can track all these people and has all these files and whatnot, and yet we can't get a healthcare system that can do the same thing.
We can walk on the moon, but what? Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, right, exactly. But we can track terrorists, but we can't track mentally ill people and keep them away from guns and get them the care that they need. This just seems like a misuse of everything. But it is the logical result of right wing policies that have told us for 30 years that we don't owe each other anything and that we're not entitled to look after each other and to care for each other. And I think this is what you get when you isolate people that much. And this family was isolated with a terrible, terrible problem, and there was no social safety net. And so I think one of the big questions everybody needs to be asking right now is, what do we owe each other? How do we take care of each other? Because this was a failure of the social safety net, and this is why we have to have one.
And our guest is Sarah Robinson of the Campaign for America Future. Let's go to the phone lines. Dave's on the phone. Dave, what do we owe each other? How do we take care of each other?
First of all, Sarah, I appreciate your knowledge of really the history of the social and cultural movements in the United States. I would characterize myself as center. You know, as a centrist person, and you know, viscerally, I mean, Sarah Palin drives me nuts. So that tells me, you know, something about myself, because there's not somebody on the left that does the same thing. really believe that all Americans are more alike than different. And I get concerned because certainly somebody like Sarah Palin, and there are also people on the left that think the same way, is that, you know, I want to be president of 50.1% of the people and don't care about the other half. So I think with things like the what happened in Arizona, I guess I think we need to point out that while, you know, maybe nobody's website directly caused this to happen and influence this guy, it does feed into the atmosphere, which, you know, creates violence likely somewhere. But we need to make the argument needs to be made to convince the people in the center, or even, you know, on the right, you know, maybe my parents, I mean, they're 75 years old, that, you know, that this is causing a problem. So we kind of need to, I think, back off the rhetoric and say, you know, it may not be connected, but it still certainly can't help.
Yeah, here's the other thing, too, that I just come back to, David. It's not acceptable to call for anyone's assassination or physical harm, period.
Correct.
End of the discussion. In fact,
correct.
I thought that was already against the law. Thanks for calling, Dave. You know, Sarah, I want to...
You've
got to make it really quick, Dave.
Okay. You know, you mentioned Canada with the amount of guns that they have up there. You know, arguments need to be made. I mean, neither the left or the right is going to get everything that they want. So we need to make arguments to move things incrementally. To where they need to be.
Okay, Dave, we're going to cut you loose. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Our guest live on the air is Sarah Robinson of the Campaign for America's Future. We have another caller, Bart.
Yes.
Bart, what's going on, Bart?
It's a good show, a very good and an important subject. Your earlier query about what if the shooter had been Muslim, it's hard to imagine a random Muslim shooting a Democrat who's having a public outing. But
or a Republican. She was a Blue Dog Democrat, and the judge was also conservative, which is a really remarkable thing, too. You know, anyway, go ahead.
But I think one of the overarching things here is plausible deniability on the right.
Yeah.
Who benefits by this killing? If the shooter is mentally unbound, he was triggered by some series of stressors or impulses from outside of himself. What agenda is furthered by this act? I think that, you know, it's like follow the money, you know?
Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit earlier. Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, nobody's agenda is served. And in fact, this is why the right wing, the GOP and all the public figures in the Republican Party are, and the right wing talkers are backpedaling from this as fast as they can. Because this is overreach. Okay, this was an unintended consequence. Yeah, they have a tactic that they use to bond their voters and their listeners to them. And it's this adrenaline fueled thing that they do. And sometimes, oops, it gets out of control. It gets into the, you know, kind of into the wrong brain and has the wrong effect. And this is what's happened now. And so this is why they're trying to pull it back, because nothing was served. No purpose was served.
Thanks for calling, Bart.
Not any Republican purpose and not any, of course, not any Democratic purpose.
Yeah, Sarah, I want to jump in really quickly and say, in my day job yesterday, I posted a story, spent all day yesterday researching these legal precedents for political incitement, which are actually set in Portland. And there were two national cases that had huge ramifications. But they were of national significance. One was the killing of Ethiopian immigrant Mulugeta Sarraw, in which the white supremacist leader Tom Metzger and his son John were found guilty of organizing and inciting fatal skinheads beating him to death in 1988. They were found guilty of that. one of the things that people have been talking about is, you know, Sarah Palin is saying you can't demonize an entire state for when this is happening. No, we're not demonizing an entire state. We're looking at individual people who may have been logically found to be inciting violence and hatred. And the other one was the case of this, I'm rattling papers, the case of this anti-choice website back in the late 80s called the Nuremberg Files.
Right.
And this case, the Nuremberg Files case, was based on a federal law against inciting violence against or threatening abortion doctors specifically, and it was also using racketeering laws designed to prosecute organized crime. And in that case, one blogger created wanted posters of abortion providers around the country and superimposed gun sights on them and included their home addresses. Three of them were murdered. And when they were murdered, they were crossed off those wanted posters. And after several years of court battles that went back and forth, Planned Parenthood, which was the organization that sued this coalition of right-wing anti-choice organizations, in the end, Planned Parenthood won, although the cash award was knocked way, way down. But that case, it was Advocates for Life Ministries. That was a shocking case, and I think that we all forget a lot about how much violence was happening, even just here in Oregon, back in the 80s and 90s around the abortion clinics. And
right.
There were dozens of bombings. Dozens of bombings.
There have been hundreds.
Right, and this is, I'm just talking about in Oregon, yeah. And in this case, in this Oregon case, the Nuremberg Files case, there were defendants, anti-choice defendants from all over the country that were implicated in this case, and also abortion providers. And you brought up the assassination of Dr. George Tiller in 2009. Well, Advocates for Life Ministries member and Portland homemaker Shelley Shannon, right? We forget about this stuff. Shelley Shannon actually was convicted of doing, I think, almost 10 bombings of abortion clinics, a homemaker. She also traveled to Kansas in 1993 and shot Dr. Tiller, but he didn't die. So he was actually shot twice.
Scott Roederer, who eventually did kill him, actually had been in contact with her.
Right. Anyway, I just had to bring that up. I mean, this is nothing new, unfortunately. So what are we going to do about it is the question. And we do have a couple of callers. We do have a couple of callers. So we have another caller on the air. Mary. We have Mary on the air. Mary, what do you think?
Hi. Well, first of all, has anybody ever discussed the proliferation of think tanks? And I don't know.
Yeah, we did a little bit.
Well, okay, and I don't know if people all get paid for working at think tanks, but nobody seems to be talking about the money. Now, all of this stuff, I mean, it's horrible and it's been going on, and after all, let's remember that's how we got this country, was through violence, and we basically stole it from the people that were already originally here, and it's been violent ever since, and we sort of glamorize violence. We glamorize it in our history books. We glamorize it in romanticizing war and war movies, and it goes on and on. But this kind of stuff makes money also. So when somebody brings up MSNBC as the alternative to Fox, or that we're getting the liberal voice out there, you'll have Ed Schultz talking about there are no jobs in this country, and then right after he says that, they'll have a commercial for Walmart. So people are not connecting the dots here, and I think we've all given up our own way of critical thinking to think tanks and the so-called experts, and we seem to need an expert to tell us about anything and everything. And also the division of money between the citizens in this country. I live in the Hawthorne District, and I've watched, since I've moved here, almost a million people have moved here. And Hawthorne District is now used to be considered bohemian and where the hippies were. And I see on Umpqua Bank now, we have corporatized our bohemianism. And there's like an ad all over the Umpqua Bank about how bohemian we are. And I would venture to say that I I call them laptop liberals now, that they like to sit and look at their web pages and believe that they care about children. Like you brought up, Lisa, you brought up that 40% of kids are not graduating high school.
In Oregon.
Now, if we get everybody to graduate from high school and they go to high school and they learn the history that I learned, without any critical thinking, without anything talking about what we've actually done in this country, not what we like to imagine that we did. And then they go on to college, and everybody has a bachelor's degree. Then they're going to need a master's degree, and then they're going to need a PhD, and we're still going to be sitting in Hawthorne, and the people that have children here, their kids are going to get PhDs.
Mary, I gotta cut you off here,
okay,
because
so
we have four more minutes.
Okay,
got
talk about,
call.
I would like you to someone
talk about the think tanks.
The woman to talk about think tanks.
Thanks,
and the money
Mary.
Involved.
Thanks, Mary.
So,
and we were talking about that about a half an hour ago. Sarah gave like the history of the conservative moment as it was played out by organizations of people who came together to think about the culture and how to take it over. And we do have one more caller, and we have
Hi.
Mike on the phone. Mike, briefly.
Yeah, absolutely. What I haven't heard since I turned it on, any discussion and relating really quick, just back to what you were saying about how terrorism affects the victims, isn't about the victims, it's about affecting politics. And right. And there hasn't been any discussion about police officers, and I was wondering if there could be any, if Susan had anything to say.
Police officers, oh my gosh, tomorrow night is the Joint Terrorism Task Force public hearing here. It's going to be at Portland State University. I think it starts at 6:30. And we should have had a mention about that, the mayor's hearing about whether Portland should join the Joint Terrorism Task Force. So what do you think about that, Sarah? Thanks for calling, Mike. Is there a take on the use of police forces in this kind of terrorism war? Because sometimes to me they seem like puppets. It's like in Portland we're arguing about whether our police department should participate in the kind of stings that we saw with Mohammed Mahmoud.
That's a wonderful conversation. Every city in America ought to be having it. How far does our police force cooperate with the feds? This is a problem they've had in Arizona. Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Maricopa County, which is halfway across the state from where the shooting happened, but has been in league with the immigration. He's taken on federal immigration authority to enforce immigration law and incarcerate Mexicans. He's massively popular for it, and he's also trampling civil rights right, left, and center, including arresting American nationals, American citizens of Mexican descent, and just putting them in jail, just because you're Mexican on the street. This is something that every town needs to be looking at, is do we want our police enforcing federal law, turning into federal marshals? And I think in most cases the answer is absolutely not. If the FBI wants to come in and look for terrorists, that's their business. If they want our help, we can talk about it, but we are not going to be deputized to be FBI agents to spend our time and our tax money looking for immigrants or looking for terrorists. This is not a role I think we want our local police taking on. It makes it, well, for one thing, if you have a Muslim population or a Mexican population in town, it makes them very, police don't like this because those people won't talk to them anymore.
And
you can't do effective community policing with people who do not trust you and think you're there to bust them.
We have 1 minute before we go off the air. I wanted to thank you, Sarah Robinson of the Campaign for America's Future. Where can people read more of your writing, Sarah?
Ourfuture.org.
Thanks a lot for being with us. And for anyone who has started to participate in this conversation, but we really were not able to dig in, Mary, your issue about the think tanks, go to the KBOO website, kboo.fm. You can create an account for yourself there, and you can participate in the discussions and blog discussions on KBOO. Email KBOO programmers. Ask them to do a show about these issues that you know are really important. And this show will be podcast on KBOO.fm by the end of today. Thanks to our engineer, Steve Nasser, and Sky, the studio dog. I want to thank everyone who called in. And don't forget about that Joint Terrorism Task Force hearing tomorrow night. Go to PortlandOnline.com to find out more about that. And stay tuned for Political Perspectives.